when people need to do it.
I hear you.
That's it.
Philo Torah Zoom Shiur for Yom Sheni, the second day of Sivan, also known as Yom HaMiyuchas, which has to do with the fact families in the time of pre-Matan Torah were supposed to organize together as units, and Yom HaMiyuchas from the word Yichus, that's the second day of Sivan. There's no Tachanun from now, from yesterday, till next Friday morning in Israel. And in Chutz La'aretz, unless they copy what we have here in Israel, they do it until Isru Chag, which would mean Sunday, after Sunday. And just for the record, it's May 18th. And that's it for now. So let us say Tehillim. Tehillim Kuf. Mizmor l'toda, hariu l'Adonai kol ha'aretz, ivdu et Adonai b'simcha, bo'u l'fanav bir nana. De'u ki Adonai Elohim, hu asanu, v'lo anachnu, amo v'tzon marito. Bo'u sha'arav b'toda, chatzerotav b'tehila, hodu lo baruchu shemo, ki tov Adonai le'olam chasto, v'ador v'ador emunato. David. Tehillim Kuf, chapter 20.
Lamanaseach, Mizmor LeDavid, Yancha Adonai b'yom tzara, Yisagevcha Hashem, Elohei Yaakov, Yishlach Ezrecha mikodesh mitzion, Yisadecha, Yizkor kol minchosecha, V'yolasecha, Yidash nesela, Yitein lecha kilvavecha, V'chatzasecha, Yimalei, Meran and Abishua Secha, Rishem Eloheinu Nigo, Yimalei Adonai, Kol Mishalo Secha, Ato Yadati Ki Yoshia Adonai Mishicho, Yanehu Mishmei Kodesho, Bigvuros, Yesha Yimino, Elev Orecha, Velev Asusim, Vanachnu, B'Shem Adonai Eloheinu Naskir, Eim Okar V'Nafalu, Vanachnu, Kamnu V'Nisodad, Adonai Hoshia, Hamelech Yanenu, V'yom Karenu.
Kufkaf Aleph 121. Shir Lama Alot Asainai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri, Ezri Me'im Adonai, Ose Shamayim Vo'aret, Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha, Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan Shomer Yisrael, Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yiminecha, Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakecha, V'yoreach Balayla, Adonai Yishmarcha Mikol Ra, Yishmar Et Nafshecha, Adonai Yishmar Tzeitecha Uvoecha, Me'ata V'yad Olam. Mark.
Misha Birach Avosenu Abraham Yitzchak V'Yakov, Hu Yivarech Es Chayalei Tzeva Hagana LiYisrael, Ves Anshei Kochos HaBitachon, Ha'omedim Al Mishmar Arzenu, Ve'arei Eloheinu, Ve'alochamim Ba'adenu. Min Halvanon Ve'Abibar Mitzrayim, Min Hayam Hagadol Ad Lo Harava, L'chol Makom Shehem, Ba'yavasha Ba'avir Ubayam. Yitein Adonai Es Hayavinu, Hakamim Aleinu, Nigapim Lifneihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yishmor V'Yatzil Es Chayalinu, Mikol Tzara V'Tzukot, Mikol Nega Mahala,
Amen. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim bein bayam bein bayabasha uvein ba'avir ha'makom yirachem aleihem ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Okay. This past Shabbos, the guy that said the Mishaberech Lechayalei Tzahal on the Minyan I davened in, read it from the Siddur. And when he said, mi gvul Livanon, I cringed. I think those kind of tefillot have to be flexible and have to reflect the situation. And we are certainly not only asking Hashem to protect our chayalim from the border of Lebanon until Mitzrayim, but into Lebanon as well. Of course, technically, Bechol Makom Shehem covers anywhere that they are, because we don't know the details, but it's just amazing how far-reaching Mossad and other security operations from Israel reach in different countries. In any event, it's all part of thinking about what you're saying, relating to it, and allowing it to be emotional as well. Okay. Shavuot is coming up. There are a whole bunch of things that I want to share today and Wednesday, Amir Tzashem. Let me start with the following. Because of, it starts really with the rule for Rosh Hashanah, that it can't begin on a Sunday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. That's called Lo Adu Rosh, Adu, Aleph, Sunday, Dalet, Wednesday, Vav, Friday. Shavuot always comes out the next day of the week that Pesach starts. So it follows that Shavuot can't be on a Tuesday or a Thursday or Shabbat. In Israel, Shavuot is only one day, never falls out on Shabbat. It's because it's 2 days, and it can't be Shabbos Sunday, but it can be Friday Shabbos, which it is this year. And that creates the situation of Israel getting ahead in Parshat HaShavua. We go Thursday night, Friday is Shavuot, finished. No Havdalah this year after Shavuot, because Havdalah is only said when you go from a higher Kedusha to a lower Kedusha. So that means from Shabbat to Chol, from Yom Tov to Chol, from Yom Tov to Chol HaMoed, from Shabbat to Chol HaMoed. And when it's Shabbat to Yom Tov, which is also going down in Kedusha, instead of Hamavdil Bein Kodesh LaChol, we say Hamavdil Bein Kodesh LaKodesh. But from Yom Tov to Shabbat, there is no Havdalah. And of course, outside of Israel, there wouldn't be anyway after Friday because they have 2 days Yom Tov. So the first day will look similar, and the second day will have a different Kiddush on Friday night and on Shabbos day between Chutz La'aretz and here, Israel. Furthermore, there are things which in Chutz La'aretz got shared with the second day or pushed to the second day. And here we have no choice but to do them all on the same day. And it's sometimes a little too much. For example, Megillat Rut, after staying up all night, rather than doing Rut on the second day of Shavuot, works out more comfortable that way if you're up all night, especially on Thursday night. And Yizkor on the second day of Shavuot, rather than everything packed into the one day, but that's the way it works. Now, because Yom Tov is Friday, we have an Eruv Tavshilin situation, which is much more common in Chutz La'aretz than it is here in Israel. Just to give you a picture of it, when Rosh Hashanah is Thursday, Friday, all over the world, then on that Wednesday for Rosh Hashanah, everybody makes an Eruv Tavshilin, Israel and Chutz La'aretz. So that's, let's call it normal. When it comes in that situation, 2 weeks later to Sukkot, which in Chutz La'aretz is also Thursday, Friday, in Chutz La'aretz they have another Eruv Tavshilin, and here we don't. We have a normal Chol HaMoed day on Friday, where cooking doesn't need an Erev Tafshilin to allow. And the same thing 1 week later with Shmini Atzeret Simchas Torah, Thursday, Friday, another Erev Tafshilin. So in Chutz Laretz, in those years that Rosh Hashanah is Thursday, Friday, we have one Erev Tafshilin to do, and in Chutz Laretz they have three. The other situation is with Pesach. Now, Pesach can't begin on Friday. It's Lo Bidu, not Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. But it can begin on Thursday. When Pesach, like this year, begins on Thursday, we don't need a Eruv Tavshilin in order to cook for Shabbos. We have a day of Chol HaMoed. In Chutz Laretz, with Thursday, Friday, Yom Tov, they already had recently, 6, 7 weeks ago, an Erev Tafshilin for Thursday, Friday, meaning on Wednesday, Erev Pesach. But in those same years, in those same years, Shavuot is Friday or Friday Shabbos, which means everybody once again has an Erev Tafshilin. And the other situation, which is less common, not so less, but and that's when Shvi Shel Pesach, actually it goes along with, no it doesn't, when the seventh day of Pesach is Friday, in Chutz Laretz it's Friday Shabbos, the last 2 days, and there's an Erev Tafshilin for everybody. Okay, if I'm mixing anybody up or confusing anyone, don't worry about it. The fact of the matter is this Thursday, Erev Yom Tov, we're all supposed to do an Erev Tafshilin. Now, Erev Tafshilin has two basic reasons for its existence, and they're different from each other in a significant way. So let's take one at a time. The Torah gives permission for us to cook for Yom Tov on Yom Tov. It does not give permission, in fact, it forbids cooking on Yom Tov for the next day or any days thereafter. Question: does the Torah forgive cooking, forbid? Does the Torah forbid cooking on Yom Tov for the next day, which is Shabbat? In other words, the situation that's coming up at the end of this week, does the Torah allow us to cook on Friday, not just for Yom Tov, but for the next day, Shabbat, as well? The answer depends on these two opinions. One opinion, which is a major, both are major opinions, but one of them is that the Torah's prohibition of cooking on Yom Tov for the next day is only when the next day is a weekday. If the next day is Shabbos, the Torah permits cooking on Friday for Yom Tov for Shabbos. Came Chazal and they said, no, we ban, we forbid, by the authority vested in us by the Torah, to cook on Friday for the next day, which is Shabbat. However, same Chazal, however, it would not be kavod for Shabbat to have to eat food just warmed up from at least 2 days ago. And therefore, since the Torah permits cooking on Friday Yom Tov for Shabbat, we, Chazal said, forbid it unless we have a flag, an indicator that this is a different situation. What we don't want to happen, says Chazal, what we don't want to happen is that a person will cook on Friday, Yom Tov for Shabbos, and the next Yom Tov will remember only that he cooked on Yom Tov for the next day, and do it if the next day is a weekday, which is not allowed by Torah law. Therefore, Chazal came along, it sounds extra, but they came along and says, no, you can't. Yes, you can, provided you make an Eruv Tafshilin, which serves as reminder that this situation is only because Erev Yom Tov, because Yom Tov is Erev Shabbos. On this basis of explanation, a person would be allowed to cook Yom Tov afternoon, this Friday afternoon, late, and stop basically for candle lighting for Shabbos. Because it's permitted. Had the Torah forbid cooking on Yom Tov for any day that followed, including Shabbat, we would be stuck. There wouldn't be any Eruv Tafshilin. There wouldn't be any notification. They couldn't do it. Because if the Torah says you can't do it, then you can't do it. Chazal can't permit anything that the Torah forbids. It only works the other way. Something that the Torah requires, Chazal could say, don't do it, like shofar on Rosh Hashanah first day, like lulav on the first day of Sukkot, like Megillah on Shabbat. Those are the three prime examples. But they can't permit something that the Torah forbids. So it's a given that the Torah, on this first opinion, that the Torah does not forbid cooking on Friday Yom Tov for Shabbat. It's only Chazal that said you got to do it with an Erev Tafshilin. Comes the second opinion, also not a small opinion, not very minority, a solid opinion that says it is not allowed by Torah law to cook on Friday Yom Tov for the next day, which is Shabbat. However, that second opinion uses a twist. They allow with an Eruv Tafshilin before Yom Tov. Again, that stands as a reminder that a person on Friday afternoon should be allowed to cook in case unexpected visitors will show up in the middle of the afternoon or even late in the afternoon and be hungry, and you'll have food to feed them. And if that's allowed, then by virtue of the fact that that's allowed, if they don't show up, you could use the food on Shabbat. Almost you could feel a wink. Get it? You could cook for guests that you're wouldn't know if they're coming or not. And, to be a little cynical, you could say, who's going to show up at 5 in the afternoon on Erev Shabbos, that's Yom Tov, and say, I'm hungry, can I have a meal? But that is considered the proper halachic situation. And the only difference between the first opinion and the second opinion is very late on a Friday afternoon. In other words, to cook right up to Shabbos, even if guests show, there's nothing to give them until later. Which means, according to the second option, second opinion, you would have to stop cooking for Shabbat, let's say, I'm estimating, an hour before candle lighting. That would be reasonable to possibly suggest somebody might come. But later than that, the second opinion doesn't allow it. Now, the halacha accepts the first opinion, but there is a recommendation that you don't go down to the wire, that you do stay a little bit away from candle lighting, which is probably something that's good to do anyway for many other reasons as well. Now, Eruv Tafshilin uses two foods, a cooked food and a baked food, since cooking and baking are two parts of the same malacha. Ha'ofer, the bake, the baking, also cooking. And the usual in most communities most people that I've ever had contact with is a hard-boiled egg as the cooked food, and a challah roll or a matzah sheet as the baked food. Technically, it could be anything. You want to take a piece of gefilte fish, you want to take a drumstick that you cook on Erev Yom Tov, or you roast on Erev Yom Tov to be eaten later, and you put away the cooked food and the baked food after you recite the bracha on Eruv. All of this is on the website Philo Torah in its own file. And following the bracha, which is Al Mitzvat Eruv, Asher Kedishanu B'Mitzvot HaTzivanu Al Mitzvat Eruv, actually Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kedishanu B'Mitzvot HaTzivanu Al Mitzvat Eruv, then there is a passage in Aramaic which can be said in Hebrew, can also be said in English. And whenever you have that kind of statement, the reason you could say it in other languages is because it must be understood. Might sound weird, but the bracha is in Hebrew, even if a person doesn't understand what he's saying. But the statement of, with this Eruv, I shall be permitted to cook, bake, light candles, et cetera, only works if a person understands it, which is why it's available in the text in different languages. Now, one other thing about that. Now, officially, what that does is start the cooking for Shabbat because the Eruv is supposed to be kept at least until you're finished cooking for Shabbos on Yom Tov. Most people save it for Shabbat. And many, many people save it for Seudah Shlishit of Shabbat, but that's not a requirement. The only requirement is as long as the Eruv exists, meaning nobody's eaten it, then you still are allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Once you're finished and you're not going to do any more cooking, no point. You still keep it, but there's no point anymore in making sure that nobody ate it yet. Another factor here, yeah, Tirza.
If you're a guest at someone's house, let's say this year, from Thursday night till Saturday night, and maybe they'll need help the hour before Shabbos on Yontif Friday, should you make your own Eruv Tafshilin, or are you included in their Eruv Tafshilin?
I think if anyone anticipates doing cooking, but also lighting candles,
Well, yeah.
if you light candles, that's one of the things the Eruv works for.
Should you have your own Eruv Tafshilin, or should you be included in theirs?
You can be included in theirs if you're totally a guest, but it's more likely, let's say if you sleep in your own place and you go out
No,
for.
you're going there to sleep.
Going there, you could you count on the house's Eruv.
Eruv.
Now there's another thing. There's a part of the text of Eruv Tafshilin which in some books will be put in parentheses, and that is a statement that you're permitting all of the things that an Eruv facilitates, lanu, for us, ulechol dorei ha'ir hazot, and for all people who live in this town. Now, officially, that extra phrase is what the rabbonim of the community are supposed to say. Because if a person forgets to make an Erev Tavshilin, then he's still allowed to cook based on the Eruv of the Rav or someone who said, Lanu ulchol dorei ha'ir hazot, and all people who live here. A person is not allowed to say, I'm not going to bother with an Erev Tavshilin because somebody is making it for me. Then it purposely doesn't work. And there are those that say, if you forget, then you get a free pass once. But it's much harder to claim a free pass the next time because it's something you're not supposed to forget. Let me interject with one of my favorite stories. A cousin of mine has a son who's now probably a grandfather already, but when he was in Cheder, he learned about Erev Tavshilin. He witnessed his father making an Erev Tavshilin, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Sukkos, Erev Shmini Atzeres. And the following Shabbos, he asked his father to make another Erev Tavshilin so he could color in his coloring book. And that meant that my cousin didn't really explain it well, nor did the Cheder. But it's a reasonable question. The point is that an Eruv cannot permit something that's forbidden. It only can rearrange the situation that changes. And this goes for all kinds of Eruv. There are three kinds of Eruv. Let's take the Eruv around a town or a city. You're allowed to carry there. How could it be forbidden to carry in the streets of a city and then poof, magic, you can carry? Not because it's a hocus pocus, now the prohibition doesn't exist and now it's permitted. It's a different kind of vehicle which says this area used to be a public domain where you're not allowed to carry on Shabbat, but under the circumstances of proper fencing around the town and whatever qualifies as walls or doorways, it transformed the area into a reshut hayachid where carrying is permitted. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's the same thing. Cooking, first opinion, on Friday Yom Tov for Shabbat, Shabbat is permitted. Chachamim said no, but then they said you could do it if you do an Erev Tavshilin. So the hocus pocus doesn't go on the Torah law, it goes on the rabbinic law, and that follows the rule, hapeh she'osar, hu hapeh shehitir. The same mouth, meaning Chazal in this case, who forbids something is allowed to be the same mouth that says, under these circumstances, you can do it. And this applies to pikuach nefesh and other things on Shabbat. If there's a situation of pikuach nefesh, then the peh she'asar, the mouth that forbid malachot on Shabbat, which is God, he is hapeh shehitir. He's the one that could say for pikuach nefesh, you could do it. But if somebody is ill, but not deathly ill, not in danger of life, then only Chazal can permit those things which they forbid, not anything the Torah forbids. And therefore, you have to know the difference between a d'oraita and a d'rabbanan. And in this case, you know, it works out the way I described it. And I think it's important to talk to the family about the Eruv. Doesn't have to be in the rush of Erev Yontif. It could be when you sit down for the first Yom Tov meal. You could say, by the way, what did I do special this afternoon? Assuming not everybody was gathered together to witness it. And you could talk a little bit about Eruv Tavshilin. And the most, not the most important, but a very significant element of this is If Eruv Tafshilin would be a procedure as to how am I going to cook on Friday for Shabbos, I can't do it without the Eruv Tafshilin, so it's the method by which I'm allowed to cook. That's one thing. But it has been elevated to a mitzvah. We say, Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav, God who sanctifies us with his mitzvot, vitzivanu, and commands us al mitzvat eruv. Now, of course, we've done this in different contexts, but you're allowed to ask the question, wait a minute. When I say al achilat matzah, I could say, where did God tell me to do that? So you point to the pasuk in Parshat Bo, Bo'erev Tochlu Matzot. Basuko Teshvu Shivat Yamim. Ulakachtem Lachem Bayom Harishon. Usfartem Lachem Mimocharat HaShabbat. Any of the mitzvot of bracha from the Torah, even when they're temporarily derabbanan, but really essentially are from the Torah, we say Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, and if anyone asks, we could point to a pasuk. How do we say that al mitzvat eruv, where eruv is not a mitzvah from the Torah? How do women or men say lahadlik ner shel Shabbat or shel Yom Tov if it's not commanded in the Torah? It's a rabbinic mitzvah, and so on. So it turns out that there are seven mitzvot derabbanan. That's an elevation of these seven mitzvot, some of which have many parts to it, above a halacha, above a rabbinic decree, of which we don't know how many there are. They're countless. But there are seven that are elevated to the status of mitzvah. And one of the interesting things which you could share at your table over Shavuot, the Aseret HaDibrot that we're going to read on Shavuot morning from Parshat Yitro contains 620 letters. And they symbolically represent Tariag Mitzvot, 613 Mitzvot, plus the seven Mitzvot Derabanan, because the Torah commands us to listen and follow the Mitzvot Derabanan. And there is a pasuk to point to that, which is Devarim 17:11, Al pi haTorah asher yaruchah, according to the Torah which they shall teach you, and to what they say you shall do. Mitzvot Aseh in the Torah, to light Shabbos candles, because Chazal commanded Shabbos candles, and Netilat Yadayim, and Hallel, and Megillah, and Hanukkah candles. And Eruv, and only the seventh of these seven mitzvot Rabbanan don't have a bracha because they are brachot. Imagine when you make a bracha bari pri ha'etz on an apple, you are fulfilling a mitzvah Rabbanan on the same level as lighting Hanukkah candles. So how come we don't have Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, Lahagid bracha livarech, something? The answer is Chazal made a decision. You can't have a bracha on a bracha, because then you'd have to have a bracha on the bracha for a bracha, and you would never get to eat the apple, because every bracha that you make is a mitzvah. So if it had a bracha. And that's why something like Birkat HaMazon, which is a Torah law, doesn't have a bracha. We don't say, Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu livarech, however the wording would be. I don't know how the wording would be because we don't have it. But we don't have it because it's a bracha. Kiddush, Friday night, Leil Yom Tov also, is a mitzvah. But there's no bracha for it because it is a bracha. Or you want to say it nicer, it is a bracha which doubles as the bracha for itself. That would be better than saying it doesn't have a bracha. So that's the 620, 613 plus 7. And that's Eruv Tafshilin. Okay, next.
Phil?
Yes.
One question. Do all the members of the household have to have a bit of the Eruv Tafshilin, or only the person who makes a bracha over it?
Say again?
Do all the people in the household have to eat some of the Eruv Tafshilin, or only the person who makes the bracha?
Technically, nobody has to eat it.
Oh,
it's
really?
Available. It should be eaten. And there's no specific, the one who made the brachas eats it. Anybody could eat it. You could share it. The purpose was, well, technically, if you want to look at it as starting preparing for the Shabbos meals, then it would be nice to do it. And that's why I like to do it on a food that we make rather than store-bought. So let's say you have a jar of gefilte fish, you could take a piece of gefilte fish and it counts, but it's much nicer when you are the one that's cooking it, you meaning somebody in your family. And if I can, I do that with the challah also. You know, then it feels like, I'm not saying this in any kind of halachic preference. A challah roll that you bought in a store, or a full challah that you bought in the store, a matzah that you didn't bake on your own, perfectly okay for Eruv Tafshilin. But there's that, you know, extra feeling and personality. Speaking of which is a hashkafa kind of thing. And I think I mentioned some of this last week, and I'm glad that I, as a FFB for as long as I have been alive, still can feel this way about adding emotion and enthusiasm and heart to the mechanical acts of mitzvot. So it starts with talking about it. That usually triggers in someone's mind saying, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about this. I'm not going to do it as a mechanical thing. All of our things, you know, I often say that the Baal Tshuva, who became from in his teens or certainly 20s or 30s, has a head start on not taking things for granted. That we don't have, because we've always taken these things for granted, we meaning FFBs. And one of the nicest compliments I ever got from a Baal Tshuva was, I know you're an FFB, but you have the heart of a BT. You know, so I thought that was very, very nice to hear. And as long as I'm telling you this, way back when I got involved in NCSY, so we're talking about 1969 to the end, 1970, 71, and onward, I was at a Shabbaton in a city upstate New York. And I don't remember exactly what triggered it, but I listened to the things that I was telling a dining hall filled with kids, most of whom were public school kids from non-religious homes. And I said, I need to listen to what I'm saying. It can't be that I'm just telling them. And I made a commitment that maybe turned me from a pure FFB into a shtickle, you know, Baal Tshuva, to the point where I don't have a middle name. So when I say a pasuk at the end of the Amidah for myself, it's only one pasuk. A lot of people say two psukim because they have two names. And any of you say psukim at the end of the thing for your name?
Yeah.
No? Yeah. It's a very special thing. I mean, it's based on the Shlá and it's based on a few other poskim as well. In any event, I added a second pasuk for myself as if I had a last name, and that was Olat Tamid Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. Why? Because upstate region of NCSY is called the Har Sinai region. And I found that I was committing myself to a Olat Tamid, a daily Ola with extra feeling. That was a commitment I made at Har Sinai, upstate New York. I just realized now that there's another religion that's based on having come from upstate New York. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Lahavdil. Mormonism comes from somebody who found gold tablets in upstate New York or whatever. Anyway, I get a little emotional, as you know, about some of these things. So, did I answer your question? Yes, I did. You could eat it, somebody else could eat it. Mark.
Question about the Erev Tavshilin. Does the Erev Tavshilin permit preparation other than cooking?
Mean like setting the table and things like that? I
Yeah.
would say so.
Okay.
I would say so. Okay. The only time you can't do that is Shabbos to Yom Tov. But the bottom line is that Yom Tov, as special as it is, is a lower Kedusha than Shabbat. And as long as I'm mentioning that, Simcha is Yom Tov's feature that's above Shabbat. But everything else, the Kedusha of Shabbat, Kavod Shabbat, Oneg Shabbat, Shabbat is up there, and then Yom Tov follows. But Simcha is specifically mentioned with Yom Tov, and that's why the Shulchan Aruch says if a woman, let's say, has two dresses that she's going to wear on the 2 days of Yom Tov on Friday and on Shabbos, she should wear the one that she likes better. I was going to say the nicer one, but that's very subjective. But the one that she feels more joy in wearing it, she likes the way it looks, the way it fits, the colors or whatever, she should wear that on Friday, Yom Tov, rather than on Shabbos. I think I could apply that to a tie, maybe, but okay. Actually, I have a new tie for Yom Tov, so we'll see. Anybody else? Let's move on.
I'm sorry, Phil, I didn't have that last thing you said about why should you wear the nicer dress on Friday?
Because Simcha is the feature of Yom Tov. Greater than it is on Shabbat because it's not mentioned for Shabbat. Oneg is, and Kavod is, and Kedusha is, but V'samachta b'chagecha, and the other two references or three references to Simcha with Yom Tov are mentioned specifically with Yom Tov. Doesn't mean you could dress like a slob on Shabbos, but okay.
Thank you.
Sam, you got it? Rochelle, I'm calling you Sam.
Yes, I said thank you.
Okay, you know why I'm calling you Sam?
Why are you calling me Sam?
Because you're identified on my screen as Samsung.
New
phone.
No, you could change
A
you want.
new phone. Nothing secret anymore.
Yeah, so I hope I'm not being a little too forward just calling you Sam. I should be.
No, you, Phil, you have
Be.
carte blanche.
Okay. Now, it's famous that Shavuot, first let me also say this. The 2 days of Yom Tov, all the way through. Let's not talk about Rosh Hashanah, that's different. But first days of Sukkot, last days of Sukkot, first days of Pesach, last days of Pesach, and Shavuot all originate from the time when Sanhedrin sanctified the months, when communication of what Sanhedrin did was very slow to reach communities, even in Israel and certainly outside of Israel, especially when the Karaim or the Tzedokim messed things up by falsifying the raising of torches, and which would have made easier. They didn't have email, they didn't have YouTube, they didn't have internet. So when Sanhedrin declared, let's say, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, communities around Israel and around the periphery of Israel and Chutz La'aretz waited to find out on which day Rosh Chodesh Nisan was proclaimed. Same thing goes for Tishrei, for the holidays in Tishrei, which is why there's a problem with Rosh Hashanah, but that's not for now. Let's focus on Nisan. Nisan's Rosh Chodesh, we know well in advance. In the time of Sanhedrin, it is not known in advance. It could be the day after 29 days of Adar. It could be after 30 days of Adar. That impacts on when Pesach is. So the general finding at the time was communities around Israel, sorry, in Israel, all over Israel, would be able to find out when Rosh Chodesh Nisan was sometime in the first 2 weeks of the month. So they would know exactly when Yom Tov is, and therefore they only celebrated one day. If there was a community in Eretz Yisrael, a very obscure community, a small community, and they did not find out when Rosh Chodesh was, Nisan, they had to do 2 days Yom Tov for Pesach. And if they found out in the middle of Chol HaMoed when Rosh Chodesh had been declared, they would recalibrate if necessary and observe only one day and the last day. Now, outside of Israel, and that was originally talking about nearby but outside, they usually did not find out when Rosh Chodesh was within the first 2 weeks. And therefore, they had no choice but to observe 2 days Yom Tov for Pesach, because you can't pick the wrong day just because you don't know when Rosh Chodesh is. It's got to be one of those 2 days, so you have to do both. That became known as Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot, of the diaspora. Again, if there was a community outside, let's say in Lebanon or in Syria, that found out from a traveler when Rosh Chodesh Nisan had been announced, they would only have one day. When.
You know, Phil, may I just add something? I don't know if it's appropriate, but since working in Clalit, in Kupat Cholim Clalit, as you know, most pharmacists here in Yerushalayim, unfortunately, are all Arab, right?
Yeah.
So certainly more than 50%. So everybody's waiting for their chagim, and they go by the sighting of the moon. They don't go by any other written calendar. So the bosses go crazy because they have no idea until that day if people are going to come to work or not come to work that day. And they end up sometimes shutting down half the pharmacies because they only find out that day that nobody's going to be there.
Okay, correct. The only thing I'll add to that is Muslims today use telescopic observation at either the observatory in Cairo or the one in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia in order to determine the beginning of their month, which would not fit for Sanhedrin's time, future also. It's not acceptable to see it by telescope. It has to be naked eye. But otherwise, you're 100% correct, and it determines when Ramadan begins and when other holidays fall out today. And to answer your first comment, no, I don't know if it's actually appropriate to have mentioned it now, but it's a good piece of information, and I'm never, I never push away anything that becomes a tangent, or a by the way, or just a thought. So thank you, Sam.
You're welcome.
What I was saying. Okay, now, once we had a fixed calendar, which we still do, then there is no safek, sfeika diyoma, it's called, a doubt on which day. Everybody knows when Rosh Chodesh Nisan is. It's the same in Israel and anywhere else in the world. And therefore, 2 weeks later is Pesach there and anywhere else in the world. So sfeika diyoma doesn't exist. However, the mainstream, very strong mainstream approach is that we do not have the authority in our time yet to change the rule of 2 days Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. It's called Minhag Avotenu Biyadenu, the practice of our predecessors is in our hand until we have a Sanhedrin that can decide whether that continues or not. The question then becomes, okay, it's only technical, it's no longer practical because we know when Yom Tov is, but it's technical. The question is, did it remain a factor of where location, or did it become attached to a person? Let's take David as an example. He is living in Chutz La'aretz at the moment, and he is a Ben Eretz, Ben Chutz La'aretz. He's a person who lives, he lives physically in Chutz La'aretz, that's his location. And he is also a Chutz La'aretz Nick. So the question is a very important question if he comes to Israel for Yom Tov. If it matters only location, which many Rabbanim hold, then in the land of Israel, there is no such thing as 2 days Yom Tov. And it doesn't matter how long you're here for, where you live originally, where you're going back to after Yom Tov, you have only one day. But the majority of poskim, I would say, let's say Ashkenazi poskim, hold that it became a chiyuv gavra. It became personal. So it's not that he lives in the States, is he is a Ben Chutz La'aretz, even when he's here, and he has to hold 2 days. So then, with these two, let's say, extreme, which one extreme would mean 1 day, period, nothing the second day, just like everybody else in Israel. On the other end of the spectrum, full 2 days as if you were still back home, wherever your home is, they're developed an in-between approach by saying, hey, look, okay, you might have an obligation, and that has different facets to it, one of which is you can't do malacha that violates Yom Tov. So that you have to keep. I'm talking about this middle ground position, which is called, for no better reason, a day and a half. I hope nobody thinks that at noon you can change, because the day and a half is over. But day and a half means no malacha that violates Yom Tov, but after Friday night, a regular Shabbos Kiddush, regular davening of Maariv, not a Yom Tov davening. If it would be a situation where the next day was a whole day, a guy would have to put on tefillin, even though he can't do any malacha violating the 8th day of Pesach. He can't eat chametz, which is a violation. Any negative prohibition he can't do in this 1.5 day concept. But the positive mitzvot, he doesn't have a second Seder, or even if he sits at a second Seder, he doesn't make another al achilat matzah or al achilat maror or anything like that. And as I said, tefillin, that's a big thing because tefillin is a mitzvah taseh in the Torah and you can't just ignore it. And davening and so on. And as the joke goes, even though you're supposed to have a rav and ask him all of your shailas, when it comes to this particular question, you find out what you want to do, and then you ask, who should I ask? And you'll get the answer. But it's solid answers. I'm not talking about fringe minority. There are powerful poskim of the past and present who say, ain't no such thing as 2 days here in Israel. But that's not why I brought this up. I brought this up because of Shavuot. Shavuot does not depend and never did depend on Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Shavuot depends on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Whenever Rosh Chodesh Nisan is, 2 weeks later is the 1st day of Pesach. On the 2nd day of Pesach, you start counting 49 days. And on the 50th day, not taking into account when Rosh Chodesh Iyar was or when Rosh Chodesh Sivan is, I don't have to know that. I have to know when Rosh Chodesh Nisan was to know when to observe Shavuot, which means it is highly unlikely that communities in Chutz La'aretz didn't find out in 2.5 months or 2 months plus. And therefore, the question is, why was there ever 2 days Shavuot? The answer is not a very satisfying answer, but the answer is lo plug, meaning if 2 days applies to Pesach at the beginning and Pesach at the end and Shavuot at the beginning and the Sukkot at the beginning and Sukkot at the end, it applies to Shavuot as well. Not because of originally Sfeika Dayoma, but because of lo plug, we don't make a distinction. All the chagim go together. Of course, I have to keep in mind the asterisk that points to Rosh Hashanah and another asterisk that points to Yom Kippur. Why don't communities in Chutz La'aretz keep 2 days Yom Kippur? Because Chazal would never make them do that. It's too much. And why do we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah? Because nobody has time to find out when Rosh Hashanah, when Rosh Chodesh Tishrei was declared the night before, because it's never declared at nighttime. So how do you start the day at night without knowing whether it's going to be Rosh Hashanah or not? So way, way back, they said 2 days Rosh Hashanah. They're a little bit of an exception to that in certain parts of Yerushalayim, but let's say 2 days Rosh Hashanah for everybody. This way, you're not going to be looking over your shoulder while you're supposed to be davening on Rosh Hashanah and blowing shofar to see if somebody comes in from the Sanhedrin courtyard to tell you, yes, it was announced this morning, or no, it wasn't. One last thing about this, which we'll have to talk about some other time in the future. In the next Sanhedrin, we go back to eyewitness testimony for Rosh Chodesh, but communication will be almost instantaneous. I believe we will have live broadcasts over the internet of the Nasi declaring today is Rosh Chodesh, today is holy, and every Jew anywhere in the world will know it immediately. So there won't be even the shred of the former Sfeika Dayoma. That wouldn't exist. Question is, will Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot still exist? And I wouldn't take bets either way, because it has become a Chiyuv Gavra. It's no longer a location issue. It's no longer a real issue of doubt in time. It became personal. If we have a Sanhedrin here in Eretz Yisrael, and Jews in Chutz La'aretz still stay in Borough Park, then maybe the Sanhedrin will decide you haven't come yet to live in Israel, you still have 2 days Yom Tov. Could be. Or they could say, ain't no such thing. We'll see. Emir Tzashem, Bekorov v'yomenu, Bimheira v'yomenu, Amen.
Amen, Shkayach.